Hello and welcome to Happy Place. I'm Fern Cotton and this is the show that helps you value the authentic you. Today I'm chatting to Natasha Bedingfield.
What are you communicating? What is it you want to say? And I think it's the same with all art. I think if you're doing something like, how can I make people like me? I think you can kind of see through that. The audience can't be fooled, like they know. Sometimes I listen to the words of the verse and it says, we've been conditioned to not make mistakes, but I can't live that way. Or I'm outside the lines. I break tradition. And I'm like, but do I? I have moments in my life where I try to be liked. So I'm like, it's great that I wrote a song like that because it keeps bringing me back. So I'm like, am I actually pushing the envelope for myself? Am I going outside of the comfort zone?
I think it's very unlikely that you don't know the words to Natasha's 2004 song, Unwritten. You might think you don't, but that song was everywhere and literally still is. So I bet you do. Natasha came round to mine a couple of weeks ago while she was in the UK. And the wild thing is, she's only recently just learned how popular her music is over here because she moved to the US to release music there a long time ago now. I really loved catching up with Natasha because she and her equally talented brother Daniel would obviously come on the various shows I was presenting back in the early noughties. More of that hilarity in this chat. But this was a really cool opportunity to get to know who Natasha is now. We talked about gorgeous noughties fashion, the various tactics we have used to get our kids to go to sleep, and how to exercise your vagina so you can project your voice. It will make sense soon, I absolutely promise.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right, let's do it. Here's the show. Natasha Bedingfield, what a joy to have you here. We wanted to do this for so long.
We have. I've been a huge fan of yours, and I listen to the podcast, and like if I live in America, and it just makes me feel like I'm at home. And I grew up listening to, like, watching you, and so like I'm really fangirling now, right now.
But well, likewise, back. You know, I'm over the moon to have you on.
Thank you.
And we were actually messaging. Now, was it last summer or the one before you played Mighty Hoopla? Was that last summer?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this performance, I watched it on Mighty Hoopla, is a beautiful big festival in London.
Yeah.
And you had 30,000 odd people singing with such passion, Unwritten, back at you. And I messaged you and went, oh my God, that is the most beautiful performance I've ever seen.
I have goosebumps thinking about it now. Like, it was such an amazing moment. It felt spiritual. Yeah.
But you also said it was like a really amazing thing to come back home and see that many people going crazy for you, because that's not necessarily the messaging you've had from the people you've worked with over the years.
Yeah, because funny enough, Unwritten, it only got to number 6 in the charts out here. And then they sent me off to America, and I basically like toured America for 6 months, every day in a different state, singing it until it became a hit out there. And so I didn't even know that English people were singing Unwritten until Mighty Hoopla. Or actually, until a Lewis Capaldi show that I did a few months before that. And it was like, what? Oh, okay. I guess it found its way back
here. Oh, my
here.
God. We all love that song. But this particular song has got this sort of magical, lasting power about it. You know, it's all over TikTok. Mm. It's now in a film called Anyone But You, which is a huge movie, and it's a real integral part of the film. Why do you think that song's got that longevity where it transcends generations and whatever's going on culturally? People just love it.
I think it feels good to sing. That I feel like that's the overall thing. It's like, because I get so many videos of people singing it to me. Not to me. I guess that I think they're singing it to me, but they're actually just singing it. But they'll send it to me. And And I love that because that was kind of the intention when we wrote it. We were like, but you know, we love it, but can you sing it? Because, you know, there's a lot of music that's like, it's great and it's really complicated and it's really, it's award winning and it's, you know, impressive. But like, but can you sing it? You know, that's the big test.
And it feels good to sing.
It does, yeah.
It's like one of those ones where you're like releasing something when you're singing it.
And I've been, you know, like everyone has probably been to a couple of shows where you just, it sticks in your memory forever. Like I went to a U2 show when I was 18, and it was at that show, singing Without You, where the heavens just opened, and you just feel whatever it is that, it's like some people might call it a God feeling or like a connected feeling with everyone. And suddenly you get answers in that moment. Like, so I've always seen myself as kind of being that role. Like I'm providing a space, a safe place for you to kind of receive what it is that you need to receive. That's what good music can do.
Yeah. There was also that video that you posted on Instagram. I've reposted it about a million times, of that amazing New York choir, like singing collective, who get together. Yes. They just get strangers together. Could be in a car park, could be in a room somewhere. And they did this, I don't know, like 4-5 part harmony of Unwritten. I had goosebumps head to toe watching that.
Me too. Full body experience. And it's, I think it's called Gaia Collective.
Yeah.
And we connected with them, and I got them to come into the studio with me because that video went viral. Because it is, as you said, it's like one of those moments. It's taking you somewhere.
Yeah. So what, are they singing on a song with you?
I got them to sing on a song that I wrote. It's called Your Child, My Child.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah, yeah. And I felt quite excited that there's communities like that who are just using music in a way that it's not about selling something, you know?
Yeah, and it's healing. I think it's really therapeutic. Me and the team were just in the kitchen talking about that exact thing that don't have to be a brilliant singer, but singing with other people, if it's in a choir, it might have been church back in the day or now at a gig, singing as a collective, it does something to you, like on a cellular level. So I can't imagine, like, for someone like you who has this gift and this voice, that is next level. That must feel incredible to
do that. It really does. I mean, using the vibrations of your voice, I'm sure something's happening. And there's studies now about the vagus nerve that we're all learning about that show that releases stress. And I know you've been doing a lot of things like that.
My chanting. Throat is something I think about a lot, because what year are we in now? 4 or 5 years ago, I had a massive cyst on my vocal cords.
Really?
Yeah. No, it was, okay. I had no clue, but I literally couldn't speak, which is obviously quite a nightmare, because that's literally all I do. Yeah. And so I went to the doctor, and I had this sort of pee on my vocal cords, and I was meant to have an operation. And I kind of got really stuck into looking at, right, well, what does this actually mean, though? You know, what am I not saying? Why am I not using this part of my body properly? Yeah. You know, like I was really became obsessed by that. Because I know, I think like
the
a
body
lot of
speaks.
People, it does. Yeah. The body keeps the score. I think I was not saying a lot of stuff. Mm. And anyway, cut long story short, I went to go and have the operation, went for a pre-op checkup, and it's gone. It just dispersed naturally. Yeah. So I have to watch this, and I'm sure you do. Obviously, it's what you do. You're using that part of your body all the time, but you've got to use it wisely.
Yeah, I have an amazing vocal coach, and he really, he's always been like that as well. That thing of like, what are you not saying? And a lot of trauma is stored in your voice. And it's kind of amazing when you start doing vocal runs and stuff, it kind of releases a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's all that tension where words get
stuck. So how did you release it? Did you do body work?
No, I literally started saying stuff. Wow. It was that simple. And it was really tiny things. Like I would be in the back of a cab and say it was too cold. I would be too worried about saying, oh, do you mind turning the AC off? I'd feel so mortified. So I'd just sit there shivering. It was silly stuff like that. So I started testing myself to go, oh, do you mind if you turn the AC off? And just feeling it and going with it. And then slightly
not
bigger
suffering.
Examples. Yeah. And then trying to do it in my personal life a bit more. And it's been a slow, long road, but it's definitely done something.
I had a word for myself. You know, like sometimes at the beginning of the year, you have a word. And the word for myself for this year was really interesting. That kind of came to me, but it was, you know, like how we put this thing of long suffering. It's like that person's so long suffering. Have you ever heard that term? Like it's kind of like this put on a pedestal thing that they're very patient. And I actually, the word for myself was long suffering no longer.
Yes.
You know, because it's actually not good to just suffer through those things.
No. And,
yeah, it affects you in other ways.
Oh my God, yeah. Hugely. Yeah. Like you say, the body keeps mm-hmm. a score. It's yeah. all in there.
Yeah.
It's all
so
in there.
I really relate to that.
How do you feel about yeah. this new, I'm imagining, liberating autonomy that artists like yourself have, where, you know, back in the day, we're the same age, and I remember you and your brother both starting out, and I was on probably Top of the Pops at the time, Radio 1, so I clearly yeah. remember you both exploding onto the scene. Back then in the early noughties, the power was purely in the hands of the label, yeah. but also the radio stations. You know, unless you had a radio station committed to playing you and a label that were going to back you, you weren't going anywhere. Whereas now, with TikTok and social media and how artists have a bit more freedom, yeah. I feel like the power has shifted back into the audience's hands. They're choosing what they like. Have you noticed yeah. that shift?
I think that's a really exciting thing about where we're at right now, because you can get that direct feedback and people are much more involved and you can connect with people more. Like, we used to have to approve photo, like, we couldn't post photos of ourselves. Like, you'd have to have like 20 people go, oh, is this a good photo?
Oh,
I remember
horrendous.
Like, there was one photo we were going to use as a single cover, and all the people who worked in the office were girls except one man, and they were like, oh, I think she looks really great. And there was one man in the room, and they were like, come and see this. They were like, doesn't she look great? He's like, the boobs are a bit small.
Wow.
Yeah. And we all looked at him and were like, excuse me.
Yeah.
You know,
But that was so commonplace.
Yeah. I was like, I'm in the room. I like my boobs.
I'm sort of shocked, but not shocked, because like, A, it's gross, but B, I've so been there. And that was so commonplace back in the early noughties.
It was.
People were talked about. And also,
talk about when you're in the room.
When you're in the
room. You're not there. Like, her, look at her, look at that.
Horrendous.
Yeah, it's weird. But
do you think that's impacted who you are today and how you are today?
I had to get over that a little bit. That's why it took me a while to kind of get into the social media thing, because it was almost like a hurdle I had to get past, because you kind of get told something enough times and you kind of go and, you know, you're like, no, that's their job and this is mine. It definitely become more like we all have to be photographers now. Like, we all have to kind of, you know, but the hard part of that, you don't have like the same kind of, you can't blame anyone when it goes wrong, you know?
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, like, if everyone's telling you what to do, then you can say, well, that was the label's fault, you know, but you kind of have to figure it out. And I think if you see it as a game, like, just like, I think kids do social media so much better. Not kids, because we don't want them on there, but like, young people do it so much better because they're not afraid of mistakes and because it's a game. It's like, oh, it's kind of like a video game.
Yeah. Isn't it mad that, I mean, with especially Unwritten coming back into the charts and everyone talking about it, I'm not even going to say again, because I think there has been sort of constant love for that song over the years, but it feels so strange that now, looking at the early noughties, is a throwback. I'm sorry, but that for me was last week.
But also, like, the fashion.
I know.
Like, the spaghetti strap tops,
it's
and you
back.
Wear three tops or, like, jeans under your dress.
Yes, the dress and the jeans.
Yeah, I never thought that would come back.
It's all back.
Yeah, it's
And we're
back.
There now the second time around. How? We're not even old enough. What's going on? I don't understand.
I don't understand.
I'm 20 still. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't understand. I do feel 20 as well.
It's terrifying. Yeah. How do you think you've changed, looking back to when you started in the industry and where you're at now? What have you learned that served you well, and how do you feel about the music industry with it changing so much?
I think it's just it's always going to be about a good song is a good song, so it's always going to be about, like, what is a good song, you know? I think it's just, what are you communicating, what is it you want to say? And I think it's the same with all art. I think if you're doing something like, how can I make people like me, I think you can kind of see through that more than ever. You can see, like, someone's sitting, even like someone's looking at the camera and like angling their face because they know that the light hits them great. The audience can't be fooled. Like, they know.
Yeah.
So I think it's more about, what are you trying to say, and us really kind of defining that for ourselves as well.
When you listen to Unwritten now, does it have a different meaning to when you wrote it?
It's challenging now. It's sometimes I listen to the words of the verse and it says, we've been conditioned to not make mistakes, but I can't live that way. Or I'm outside the lines. I break tradition. And I'm like, but do I? You know, and I realize with my fashion choices, sometimes I've been kind of like trying to look pretty or be, you know, I have moments in my life where I try to be liked. So I'm like, it's great that I wrote a song like that, because it keeps bringing me back. So I'm like, am I actually pushing the envelope for myself? Am I going outside of the comfort zone? That kind of thing.
I love that. So you're like learning from your song all over again.
Yeah, I want to do a photo shoot that's really celebrating that, where I'm like really edgy. Yeah. And I don't know if I can dare to do that, but isn't that fun that we have to be in that position where I can, I mean, we all can do that.
Yeah, it's so good to get out of our own comfort zone and and try new stuff. So let's go back to when I remember you coming onto the scene. Obviously, your brother was a little bit before you. So his album was out, was it 2002? You were 2004?
Yeah.
So what do you remember of that time? Was that helpful, him coming out first, or was it a pressure?
It was helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's my older brother, so he always did everything first. And I've always kind of been able to watch and learn and be like, oh, I won't do that and I will do that.
Yeah.
That's the benefit of being the second child. But I think, like, you've met so many people that when they when they've had a brush with fame of some kind, and it always kind of, it's always overwhelming. Like, there's no way to kind of prepare for it. It's an amazing thing, but it's always a bit like, whoa, that was crazy.
Did he have active advice for you?
He let me use his band, which was amazing.
Love.
Yeah. But he had a car crash like a couple of weeks before I released my first single.
Is that the and timing of it?
Yeah,
I didn't realize.
He was in New Zealand. My whole family was in New Zealand with him where he had the crash, and he had the screws in his head. Like, he had the Kanye West, I don't remember what you call that thing.
Yeah, I remember the pictures of him. He got packed with this head brace, essentially. Yeah. It's very serious.
Yeah, and then he's totally good, but it was like, it was a bit of a weird time because I was releasing the music, but they were all over there.
Wow.
And that was the hardest thing, is that the press really loved me, which is great, but they would say horrible things about him.
Mm.
Like, every article was like, the glorious, something like, you know, Natasha Bedingfield and her ugly brother. Like, they would say things like that, and it was just like, that's so wrong.
Awful.
And it's like, there's not enough room for two siblings, and they want you to not be friends, and they would just, again and again, is there any rivalry between you? And that was very hurtful for him, and for me as a sister, because it's never really was our dynamic.
No. Yeah. And then you're having to sort of deal with the personal ramifications of that, and also do your own thing.
Yeah, but apart from that, I feel like I got the best job I could have ever got, because it kind of, like, on stage, I get to be larger than life. I get to explore that kind of part of myself that I wouldn't have otherwise. You know, I get to nearly fall off stage in my heels and, you know, and sing terrifyingly high notes and manage to land them and sing in front of important people. And, you know, and everyone's important, you know, but, like, sing in front of a president or something who's not Trump.
That is yet to happen.
It was Obama, but I was just trying not to name drop.
You can name drop. Looking back at that period, and if I sort of rewind back to witnessing how the music industry moved around the early noughties, it was insane. It was so fast-paced. Artists were just having to go from sometimes country to country in a day. You'd do a performance in the morning in one country, being another continent later on that day.
It was so weird,
How did you deal with that, the sort of fatigue and the attention, the pressure of that sort of schedule?
To be honest, I have a lot of memory loss. That tells me that it was quite stressful, because my body just has, like, I don't actually remember where I was for a whole year. Kind of, there's places I don't know where I've been. And I remember meeting other people who've gone through that, and a lot of times they kind of, when they're in that mode, when they're on the red carpet, they're a little bit, there's a kind of spaciness, because you're kind of not, you're like in a zone.
You're trying to cope with it a lot of the time.
Yeah, but you're also channeling something. You're also just kind of embodying and going into a state. So, like, sometimes when I go on stage, when I come off, I'm kind of, I can't remember people's names. I can't, like, you're kind of going into a zone. So you're also channeling. There's a kind of shamanistic kind of thing when you're on stage, and you're actually, when you're doing it well, you're actually in a flow.
Mm.
So it, you know, there's the ups and the downs of that, you know?
Have you always been able to get into that flow, or is that something with sort of time and confidence that you've been able to go, oh, I don't have to worry so much about how I'm sounding or what the audience are doing? You're just much more in the moment.
Sometimes it's really hard to get into that. Like, and you know, like, how we all gravitate towards, like, the negative things that people say? It's like online comments or, you know, sometimes it's just that one comment. Like, everyone says something great, and then you just, that one keeps you up all night. But it's like that on stage. Like, there's sometimes one person in the front with their arms crossed and a frown on their face, and it feels like they're casting a spell on you, you know, and you're just, oh, like, you know, you just kind of have to kind of,
and then you're trying to impress them, like, I will win you over.
Yeah.
I will make you enjoy this gig.
Yeah. Or if you think of the wrong person, like, if you think of someone from school who didn't like you, or, you know, like, if you think of, yeah, like, sometimes I try, you know, and you just develop your techniques. Like, so sometimes I'll think of I think of Tina Turner, or like I think of Mick Jagger or something, like someone who's like abandoned on stage, and that usually helps get me back.
So great. So you were all musical growing up. You were actually in a band with Daniel and your younger sister at one point, is that right?
Well, so the best way to learn how to do music is to get in a band. So it wasn't a professional band. It was just a band with my siblings, and it was just like a way of learning how to do music. And my sister and I, we just learned so much from Daniel, like learning how to be in harmony and stuff like that.
So how did you all discover music? What made you move in that direction and think, right, I've got a voice, or I'm really good at production? How did you move towards that?
We did grow up in church, and there was this amazing Afro-Caribbean church. I don't know what it's called right now, but the Wade brothers, they were these brothers, and they had this amazing church in South London. And they were like our uncles. They let us call them uncle. And they had this whole thing where they would let kids play in the service. So they would have like an 8-year-old on the drums, and who was really gifted. Like everyone was gifted. Everyone is gifted in that family. And they just welcomed us in and let us be part of that. So I think some of our musicality comes from that, really. And and just, you know, in church, there's a thing that music takes you somewhere. It connects you with your higher self. It connects you with each other and with God. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And so when you started gravitating towards, this is actually now a career option, this is what I want to do, and your brother.
Yeah.
Your parents were like very cool about it. Go for it.
Yeah. My dad actually encouraged me to quit university, which I know is unusual because usually dads are like, come on, do the sensible thing. But he was like the other way around. He was like, we all know you're a singer. Like, just do it.
I didn't even go to uni. It wasn't really? Was not on the cards. So my parents were just like, whatever. You got to do.
They knew that you knew what you...
Yeah, but I'm really grateful for that. And I think, you know, there is still a lot of pressure on kids in the school system or to go down a certain route, or it's the parents' impression that they put on the kids of where they should head. And I think, actually, it's so... I feel very lucky that my parents were just like, do
Me
what
too.
You've got to do.
Did you do kids' TV?
Yeah.
Because that's where I feel like...
Yeah, I didn't... Yeah, I barely went to school, quite frankly.
I feel like terrible. TV was a bit... Like, kids' TV was better back then.
It was... I don't think it really exists anymore. It's kind of... There's stuff on Netflix, but I was very lucky. I got to be really shit and practice on kids' TV without any judgment, because social media wasn't there, and just do my thing. But I'm so grateful, and I'm sure you feel the same, like having parents that were going, follow your heart, do what you've got to do.
It's
so lovely.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
One of my favourite videos you posted on Instagram is with you playing your mum a new song with headphones on. I was like, I was all weepy. She cries, your heads are touching.
It's so lovely.
She's feeling the lyrics.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
So that's the song that
The Gaia Collective
sang on. And I did it with my friend Milk, who's an incredible activist and artist. And like we were in my mum's back garden, and the light was just, it was just like so beautiful. And I couldn't have imagined that she would have a better response. You know, like,
so adorable. She really felt it.
Yeah. And she's really always been like a believer in all of us, you know, you know, that we're going to do great things, and she always wants to change the world and everything. So I think for her, that song really like struck a chord.
It's so lovely.
Yeah. I was so touched.
That was so gorgeous. Yeah. So she lives in the UK.
Yeah. Molly.
You're now in the States.
Yep.
So how you must miss her hell of a lot.
I do. Yeah. I mean, we've all found ways to connect, haven't we, now, because of technology, which is great. But yeah, I haven't seen her actually since I've been here for a week. But they've had so much press, I haven't seen her. Isn't that terrible?
But you'll get to before you go.
Yeah, I'm going to see her tomorrow. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. And just do, mm-hmm. What will you do? What would be your dream day with your mum?
Well, I have a son, a 6-year-old, so it would be amazing to let him to see his grandma and just to
That's
be at her
so
house.
Lovely.
Her house is really cozy and
gorgeous. And how your little boy's called Solomon.
Solomon.
He's 6 years old.
Yeah.
How's he doing? Because you posted this beautiful video a few years back now.
Yeah.
it was a very meaningful moment because it was just before Christmas and you were reflecting on a time that was much tougher when he was tiny and in hospital.
So when he was two, he was in hospital for 5 weeks. He had a spontaneous brain abscess and it's never been explained what it was. You know, anyone who's gone through like a health thing like that, you know, and come out, you know, fully recover, you know, you just know, it just like changes your perspective on life and just to see how amazing doctors are. And like my, you know, like I'm not anti-vax. I'm not anti anything medical because medicine saved my son's life. And it's like, I'm going to be forever grateful, you know?
I mean, he's such a brave little guy.
And he's amazing.
Must have been incredibly stressful for you and your partner to go through it.
Yeah,
at the
time. We were touring. We had a tour all over the States. I had a record deal. As soon as I had my baby, I got a record deal and in America, and we made music. And it was incredible to kind of have my baby breastfeeding in the studio and and see that our son, he's very flexible and could travel. And we went on tour. And then as soon as we came off tour, and he had this seizure, and we were in hospital, and it was like, oh. It was this moment of like, life is so fragile and, you know.
It's so scary. Yeah. What helped you get through that stressful period?
I mean, the fact that he lived really was helpful. What helped me get through? Friends, family, prayer. Yeah.
And he's doing good now.
He's great. Yeah.
That's so great. Lovely. He can come with you and tour around with you.
So fun. Yeah.
Is he showing any musical
ability
at the moment?
Definitely.
Bit of singing going on?
I mean, so I'm like, I do that thing like when you tell your kids to do stuff and you sing it to them. Like, you know, when you need to clean your room, and you're like, clean your room, you know, like just like all day. Like when he's getting ready for school, I'm like, I hope you know how loved you are. And then I make him reply, yes, you know, hope you know how loved you are. Yes, I know. You know, I make it say genius back. Yeah, because sometimes difficult stuff, like it's time to go to bed now. Like it's good, it's easier in a song.
Are you still singing that? I'm not. I'm
really
shouting that one.
I'm shouting that one too.
Yeah, no, I need to add singing into the household. That sounds much nicer than me screeching.
I know, like putting your kid to bed is supposed to be a nice,
it's hard though, isn't it?
I find it so brutal.
Oh, like, mate, bedtime.
It just is never ending. It's like
never ending.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like waiting for it to feel good. I mean, I love all the cuddles, but it's...
I hate to tell you, my kids are 8 and 11 and I'm still doing the same. Yeah. We've got into terrible habits. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I am... So my kids share a room because they don't want to not share a room. They don't particularly love each other. Like, they argue all the time, but they want to sleep in the same room. They feel safer in the same room. So I'm like, great. And it's next door to our bedroom. They're in a bunk bed. I've specifically bought a bunk bed with a double at the bottom because invariably one of us ends up in that double bed at the bottom of the bunk bed in the middle of the night. But getting to bed, we've got a nice little routine going down. Don't mind that. Love the, you know, reading books, gorge. I'm a big reader. I love reading with my kids. We've got into the habit of I or my husband has to stay in the room whilst they're going to sleep.
Oh
yeah.
Oh, what do you call it? You're their security blanket or something.
Oh, mate, I wish I hadn't started it. I mean, I've tried to use it for my benefit. I'm like, I'll meditate while I'm lying here. So I'll have, and then I'm like, I'm bored. I'll do work emails. I'll do some work emails. Yeah. I try and use that time. But I, at 8 and 11, am still lying next to them, waiting for them to go to sleep.
Yeah,
and
then, but then there's that whole other method, the sleep training method, and then it's like leaving them to cry it out.
That feels cruel.
And then there's new stuff. I think Gabor Mate or whatever is talking about that. That's not. So it's funny because you'll have people say it's wrong not to, and then the next studies will be like it's wrong to do that. It's so hard, isn't it? You just have to follow your instinct with each kid, I think.
Yeah, and I think my instinct still is, although I'm sometimes lying there thinking, why am I doing this? This is better for them because they're not stressed out.
Yeah, and I think that thing of like this is changing. Even in those hard times, that's changing me, right? Like that's doing something good. I'm sure it is.
It's cultivating patience.
I'm sure it is. Even though, like, I was really excited because, like, I found a book app, a kids' book app on the phone, and I was holding my really heavy phone up and reading to him. And then the only problem is that I'm so hypnotic when I'm trying to read in a hypnotic way. So, you know, like, and hypnosis is that you say everything
so
in a pattern.
Yes.
And you say it with the same tone.
And then he drifts off to sleep.
And then he drifts off to sleep. And you try not to be too interesting. But the problem is that I fell asleep and I dropped the phone on his face.
Oh, God. Sorry, I'm laughing. But that is funny.
Yeah.
I mean, the lengths we'll go to.
Yeah.
And also bedtime when you've got jet lag in the equation.
I mean, I just fall asleep all the time and then I start talking and then I'm making up new parts of the story and I'm half asleep.
It's absolutely bananas.
But it is lovely, isn't it? The kid cuddles.
It is. It's gorgeous. And I keep thinking, especially with my 11-year-old.
Like, what age do they stop cuddling?
Well, he's on the cusp of pre-teeny thing where he'll still give me a really hearty hug at home. Be like, Mum, I love you. But then when he's at school, if I'm dropping him off, he's like, drop me off and then go and park the car. And I'm like, oh, cheers.
That happened already.
Yeah, at 11. Yeah. That's where we're at, Natasha. It happens quick. Yeah. And I remember my stepkids are now adults. Mm. And I met them when they were tiny kids. And it's like, oh, God, that I've seen that whole thing happen. It's and now they're adults. You don't feel like in the moment it's going to happen. You feel like they're going to be tiny forever.
Isn't that the weird thing? And then suddenly you're going to be like, but I'm going to... When will they be here while you're falling asleep? And they're like, no, thanks.
Yeah,
is that going to feel weird?
Like, yeah, we're going to think, oh, but I want to still do that. We can't win.
Yeah, you're going to have to buy another dog and...
exactly. More kittens.
Or cats.
More kittens.
Yeah, more cats.
I saw on Instagram as well. I mean, I've been obviously just stalking your Instagram page, quite frankly. You doing a very accomplished headstand. Is yoga part of your thing?
Yes.
Yeah,
I love yoga.
What kind of yoga are you doing?
I started doing yoga... just before I had a baby 6 or 7 years ago, and it changed my life. Probably like a lot of people will find the thing that does that for them. And before that, I was like a really workout, like a boffin kind of army style, like give it to me, make it difficult, like, you know, that kind of thing, yell at me. And then suddenly I just was like, I actually talked to my trainer. I was like, you're yelling at me.
Yeah, I don't like that.
And she didn't like me telling her that. But I found yoga, and it, you know, sometimes your body just tells you what's right for you. And I just needed something more gentle. And what I like about yoga is it's not a performance. It's not ego driven. You're not trying to show off, even though I know I was doing that headstand. But it's not about, look at me, I can do a headstand. It's just like, this is good for me, and breathing. And the main thing that I liked about it is the emphasis on breathing. And I don't know about you, but I used to do this thing when there was anyone taking a picture, I would hold my stomach in.
Oh my God, I still do that. Yeah. I hate that I do that.
Yeah. And so when I started breathing in and breathing out, suddenly the pictures look better.
Well, because
my whole face looks relaxed.
Women are trained. You know? We've got to suck it in and we've got a flat tummy and all that. And especially after having kids as well, it's like, holy crap. But the thing is, when we're breathing well, we're meant to be breathing from here. And
exactly.
I'm sure when you're singing, you've got to
use your diaphragm.
And it's using your belly and pushing it out. So we've got to retrain ourselves.
But you have to let go of your ego in that way as a woman anyway, when you have babies or I don't know why we have this such thing about particularly our stomachs,
I know, I hate that, because also it's such a center of emotion. Like, it's
if
I'm feeling weird, it's always my stomach that gets it first. Like, I'll be bloated or I'll feel discomfort. It's so to be holding it in the whole time, I don't think it's great for us.
The only place that I'm really holding it in is when I go through on an airplane, when they make you go through the thing. I'm always holding everything in, including my vagina, everything. I'm like, I don't know why I feel like they can see into my body. So I'm just like tensing everything.
Holding your vagina.
Like, I'm doing Kegels, everything.
The Rex made my vagina. Quick, hold it in,
like,
guys.
Skinny vagina.
Skinny vagina. I mean, I'm sure there are people be very bothered about, you know, skinny vaginas. It's all happening these days.
I never know how much they can see on those things.
I hear you. I don't know if it's possible to suck it in, is it? Probably not.
Yeah.
Is it? Wow.
I'm doing that now. No, somebody said, who is it? Janis Joplin. She said she sings from her pussy.
I love that's like depth, isn't it?
Yeah, so I tried doing that. And this is what the joy of a podcast, you can really go there.
We're going there,
my backing singer and I, we always look at each other and just like with that look, like,
you're singing from your vagina.
Right now.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah,
I love it.
It does help.
It does.
Yeah.
I think even just picturing, like, I can do it now with my voice. If you're picturing from, like, coming from that bassy low, that powerful part of you.
Yeah, but men walk around like led by their dicks, don't they?
Of course.
So why not?
Be led by our pussies.
Yes. Yeah.
We should be.
Yeah.
I love it.
Do you know the other thing that singers do, like how to hit the high notes? Because since I had a kid, my voice is much higher and much lower as well. Actually,
really?
Yeah, because your voice is in your prime in your 40s. Who knew that, right?
Well, like, we're not told that. We're told everything goes to shit in our
40s. Yeah, and as soon as I turned 30, people were like, so what are you going to do after music? Like, people will tell you to your face that you're old as a singer. And I was really surprised by that, because I don't think that. I don't feel old, and I don't think there's a lot of singers who are all over 50
yeah,
as
who
well.
Are incredible.
Yeah, exactly. But one of the things that divas do, which I found out, is that they want to be rooted to the floor to sing those high notes. So you either, and you want your back to be straight, so you either lean back, and that's the Tina Turner, where she leans back like that. Yeah! You know, your back straight, but you bend your knees. Or you do the Celine Dion where you, actually Tina Turner does that too. You
lean
like keep
forward.
Your back forward. Yeah, yeah.
Some deep gurgling going on. Something's moving in my depths.
Your body's telling
What's
us
going
something.
On?
You want to be a singer.
I need to be more like Tina Turner. No, it's
imagine
so
you do a whole podcast like that.
But it's so interesting because I will often have, if I have to go and do like a talk or something, I could be feeling really good. Like I feel really good today. I feel like my throat channel is really open. I feel pretty rooted and grounded. There are some days, obviously, you wake up and you just feel a bit wobbly or you just feel a bit out of sorts. And I have to really picture like grounding myself, like anchoring myself. But also I have to sort of have my posture has to be very gorilla-like. Like I'm like this. I'm like, I have to be very like shoulders back and I'm to convince myself that I can go out there and do it. But it changes how I speak.
That's amazing. So that's intention.
Yeah. Like sometimes my voice will feel really closed and tight and I'm like, oh, I hate this. I feel gross. And then other times it feels really bassy and much nicer to just use my voice to speak.
I saw Annie Lennox speak at a woman's, like a woman's activist event. And as she talked, the ground, it felt like the ground was vibrating and it felt like there was like goosebumps, just like, you know, it was just, it was like it was amazing. And I became aware that when you talk, it can, or when you sing, or when you express something, how it can move things.
Yeah, it's not just what you're saying, it's how you're saying it is so important. And I think we forget that and we sort of lose power in certain situations. You know, that's probably why I got the cyst, is when you're not speaking from that place, you're just sort of, you're swallowing words.
Making yourself small.
Like
I've talked to some people where I felt like my shoulders, I could not sit up straight. It's good to notice, isn't it? And what is that?
I can picture one person in my head now that whenever I speak to this person and I like this person, my voice, it goes really quiet and weird and like my throat goes really tight and it's, like, I don't know if it's them or if it's my reaction to them or whatever. It feels more laborious to like, oh no, I need to be me and feel confident in being
Sometimes
me.
Sometimes it's probably just that they remind you of someone from the part, like, you know, like a family member or something, and they've got enough similarities that it just makes you small or something.
Yeah.
It's a survival technique. And I think probably if you do consciously do a change in that moment, it probably helps fix some things from the past too.
Yeah, I reckon. You can't underestimate that stuff.
Yeah.
You really can't. Yeah. It's so fascinating. So yoga's a thing. I love yoga too.
Good.
That's
a
thing for me. Definitely grounding, less killing myself, doing workouts. What else keeps you balanced in the craziness of motherhood and traveling around the world and recording new songs and performing in front of audiences? What keeps you stable?
I think it's just trying to be present and even when it is hard and just noticing it and saying, kind of noticing it, mindfulness, and be like, this is really hard. But then trying to have a trust that this is somehow my body, like I can handle this. I'm not going to lie. It really is hard to balance that stuff. There's moments where it feels effortless, but it's hard. It's like, you know, being on stage feels effortless. So sometimes it makes those other things that were hard much easier.
Yeah.
But just like, there's those unglamorous things, like, you know, picking up dog poop and I don't know, stuff like that.
Yeah. So I've got a kitten at the moment. So we've got a litter tray in the house, which I'm not loving.
Yeah.
So I'm quite literally picking up shit.
Yeah, me too.
You've got to do it.
Yeah.
It's all in the mix. And also, your brother's back. So he's now doing stuff again. He's got a tour coming up.
Yeah, this is great, isn't it?
So cool.
Yeah.
So how's he feeling about everything? You've been chatting about, you're back
he's
in
great.
The UK, he's doing his
tour.
Yeah,
so what happened is that everyone, like people, I was getting these messages because I was getting some viral moments on TikTok and people were like, well, what, tell me about your brother. So I did a post about him and me, like, did you know that this is my brother? And then that started getting a lot of numbers. And like, it's just all kind of been a good flow because he was planning on doing some shows anyway.
I need to be at that show.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you gotta get through this.
I do too.
It's like, it's that song.
Also, there's someone called Fred again.
Love Fred again.
Yeah. And he was playing my brother's stuff. So I think it's all just starting to get a little bit of a flow. And people are saying they really are more feeling like wearing bright colors.
Yeah.
But you're wearing and playing music from happier days.
Yeah. From throwback of the early noughties.
Right.
God almighty. I mean, I was reminiscing earlier thinking about seeing you both back in the day around that time. And I've got this one memory that jumps out of when I had to go wakeboarding with your brother.
Wow.
And it was...
On TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was one of those like lakes near Thorpe Park.
Yeah.
And your brother was really good.
He's very good.
But is that that's his thing.
He's
right?
Got he great likes... balance.
Yeah, so he was amazing. And I was holding on to like a pole on the side of the boat and still not managing. I was so shit.
But so I remember, frustrating.
It was so awful. But I remember him just being like, he wanted to go around again and again and again. And we were like, let him go. Okay. He was having a great time. That was a sort of interview we were doing back in the early noughties.
So fun. I noticed that when the camera's on, I don't like doing things like that until the camera's on. And then suddenly I'm like, you want me to jump off that cliff?
Yeah, okay,
I'll do it five times.
Like, oh my God. I know, I said yes to everything back then. I was like, yeah, I'll pop a wetsuit on and go wakeboarding with Daniel Bedingfield at Thorpe Park. Sure. It's ridiculous times.
Yeah. But now do you have to do that kind of stuff with your kids?
Oh, kids. Yeah, sure. But I'm not like, no one's
you have to be supermom
watching. Yeah. I'm kind of, I like all that stuff. Yeah. I like the balance of the normal and the picking up cat poo and the doing all that kind of thing.
Keeps
and
you
then
grounded.
Getting to do the fun bit still, but much more, I think, for both of us now, on our terms, doing it how we want to do it. And that feels really great.
And I love that you are like, that it's not, you'll talk to the camera when you're glammed up and then you'll just be in a moment where you've just woken
like
up and talking about trying to meditate. And and everyone's got a podcast now. Everyone's got.
Oh, mate, I know.
But when I hear you talk, I'm like, now that's a professional. Like, I see you as like the.
Thank
like,
you. We'll clip that.
Like, you're the Tina Turner of the podcast.
Yes,
like,
I'll take
you're
that.
You're just doing it. You're like showing everyone how to do it. Like, because you can just deliver these lines in a way that you just, it just relates. You know?
Well, that is so kind. Yeah. Well, for me, this is a gift because I get to do the bit of the job that I used to love on radio and all the other stuff.
Yeah.
But again, there's no rules and it's just like. Yeah. Like we're doing now, we're just chewing the fat and seeing what's what and having a nice chat rather than when it was on the radio. And I'm sure you felt this when you've been sort of like pushed from pillar to post, going from a radio station in Germany to the UK to God knows where else, that you're in for 2 minutes and you're meant to give this soundbite of everything you're doing in one moment.
And if you're on TV, then you have the thing in your ear, right? Like you have a producer talking to you.
Yeah. But then for you guys, when you're in whatever country, you have a translator, right?
Sorry.
What have you got to remember to do?
Do you do that?
Is that an alarm?
Oh wait,
what's it telling you?
So that's one of my mum tricks, but I set alarm. It says Dude Medicine. That's my dog's medicine. My dog's called Dude, isn't that
but
fun?
Where's Dude?
In LA.
Oh!
So I've got to call my sister. My dog's called Dude because we thought it would be funny that if you're in a dog park and you yell out, Dude, it would be very confusing for everyone.
Oh, I love it. But also I love that this is multi-school, this is mum life.
Right, it is.
Right here, an alarm set to feed dog that's in LA.
The thing I have to just double check because sometimes I set two alarms like 5 minutes apart.
Is there another alarm?
Probably. I just turn it off.
I love it. Yeah. Well, look, it's been such a joy talking to you.
You too.
And I'm so happy we get to sit face to face rather than just seeing you on a screen. Yeah. And I hope that you have a great rest of your trip in the UK.
Thank you.
And that we get to see each other soon.
Yeah, let's hang out soon.
Thank
please.
You.
Yay.
Oh, dude the dog. I really hope he got his meds when he needed them, little dude. Natasha, that was so much fun. Thank you so much for making time to come and see me while you're in the UK. I really loved that. Now, I cannot tell you how much you're going to want to be back here next week. I'm chatting to another huge noughties music icon. This woman has the most energy of anyone ever. You're going to cry with laughter. There's some brilliant bonkers stuff in the chat, but there are some incredibly moving moments as well that I really hope will touch you, because they definitely did me. Come over to @happyplaceofficial on Instagram and you can have a guess at who you reckon it is. So look, that's next week, but for now, the biggest thank you again to wonderful Natasha, to the producer Anushka Tate at Happy Place Studios, and to you, you blimmin' lovely lot. Let go of your stomach and breathe out. Chat soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.